Good morning, everybody. before I start, I just wanted to sort of apologise to our visitors because my exhortation today is a little bit Dandy-centric. It's designed for the members of Dandy, really, but I don't think we're particularly unique, so I imagine that the things that affect us and have affected us and will affect us will not be totally foreign to you, to your visitors. So I'm really glad you're here. But if you feel that, we're sort of like, maybe we shouldn't be here. It's not like that. So anyway, that's just be that as it may. Hopefully you can take something from it. I think you'll be able to. So let's fly now. I think it's full screen, so.
It's a square box here.
No one? No. You can tell my superior computer skills.
Let's get the square box in there.
Oh, stop it.
Yeah,
no, it's
good. Let's get full screen first and
then
go back.
Yeah.
Just quick stuff. Go get back.
Right.
We're not hearing it through the system.
Yeah. Why not? I wonder why.
You actually haven't plugged in the sound.
Ah. Well, that would explain something. I even arrived early to set all this up.
Your headphones.
Try again. Go fairly loud.
Two households, both alike in dignity, in fair Verona, where we lay our scene. From ancient grudge break to new mutiny, where civil blood makes civil hands unclean. From forth the fatal loins of these two foes, a pair of star-crossed lovers take their life, whose misadventured, piteous overthrows, docked with their death, bury their parents' strife. The fearful passage of their death marked love and the continuance of their parents' rage, which but their children's end naught could remove, is now the 2 hours traffic of our stage.
Both alike in dignity, in fair Verona, where we lay our scene. From ancient grudge break to new mutiny, where civil blood makes civil hands unclean. From forth the fatal loins of these two foes, a pair of star-crossed lovers take their life.
Dandy, I bet, is we're having to close as we are now and to reform in another form in around about February, March next year. But that's life. Things change, and often change can be for the better, or at least it can certainly have an upside. And God willing, this will be the case. And there's part of me that's anticipating the good things that hopefully, God willing, will come from the change. But there's something that makes me much sad, or that would make me much sadder than seeing the end of the D-Bec. And that will be if we can't bring it to a close in the same spirit in which it was begun. Now, admittedly, Deb and I weren't part of Dandy when it first began, although as a ring-in, I did actually help cook the barbie on the first open day. At that time, I had no idea that I would actually end up a member here. No idea whatsoever. But from the very first planning meeting we attended, I felt that I had found a true spiritual family And despite the ups and downs, I have loved it from the start. And my understanding is that the members of this ecclesia have been, in a sense, trailblazers in demonstrating to a somewhat conservative and blinkered community what can be done when many of the traditional do's and don'ts are put aside and the focus is put squarely on what the Bible does and doesn't say. And personally, I feel enormous gratitude to so many of you for the biblical insights that you've shared with me. But taking something apart is never as much fun or as rewarding or even as bearable as building it in the first place. Ask any tradie who's just been told that the plans have been amended and that the work they've just spent the last day or a week or whatever building needs to come down or apart again. It's painful. When you've built something that you care about, you don't generally build it with a view to taking it apart. You build it to last. And often it's quite hard to take apart. If you could sort of smash it to pieces, it might be easier. But if you've got to retain enough to rebuild again, it's hard. And in the same way, I suspect that we may have a bit of a hard time dismantling, as it were, our ecclesia. Especially as we need to have something left to rebuild with, and B, which is really just part of A, we have to do it with love for God demonstrated by our love for each other. And we will probably think that that shouldn't be that hard, but there's lots of things that shouldn't be that hard that often are. I want to talk a little bit about metal, specifically steel. And given that timber is really my thing, and steel and science are definitely not, please don't be too hard on me if I don't get my facts exactly right, but I think the analogy is worthwhile anyway. I have both a father and a father-in-law and a son who love steel, so I've sort of and I talked to all three of them. There is steel referred to as mild steel, and if you buy some brackets from Bunnings or a garden fork or a bit of plate for a homemade Barbie, it will probably be mild steel. This sort of steel is relatively soft, as steel goes, and it's malleable. That is, it can be shaped and bent and reshaped and straightened without too much consequence. But if you want to make an axe or a chisel or a knife, you can't or you wouldn't normally use mild steel because it's soft, and even if you sharpen it, it won't stay sharp. The best steel to use if you want to achieve and keep a sharp edge is what's referred to as tool steel, which, among other properties, has a higher carbon content than mild steel. And these are, and the additional ingredients, the carbon and other things, depending on what quality of tool steel you want, these ingredients produce a steel which can be hardened and which then allows it to be sharpened and keep a sharp edge. But the hardening process, which involves heating and cooling the steel, can result in very different degrees of usefulness depending on how the cooling occurs or how the heat treatment occurs. The steel is heated red hot, but if it's cooled too quickly, it becomes very hard, but it also can become very brittle. Whereas if the steel is cooled progressively, in a controlled way, it can be both hard and tough, which is exactly what you want. It's no use having the hardest edge on a tool if the edge is so brittle that it snaps off when you try and use it. And there is also another thing that can occur with tool steel, and that is that while a piece of tool steel may be, as a whole, may have been treated properly, if it is repeatedly hit or subject to constant friction, as the surface layer can become extra hard and brittle. And this is usually referred to as a steel being work-hardened, becoming work-hardened. I guess at least some of you will be sort of forming ideas of where I'm going with this and what I take from it. And it might not be entirely accurate, see how we go. I couldn't think of any of our members who haven't had to deal with at least some degree of personal or family hardship over the last couple of years. And indeed, some of you have had an enormous amount to cope with. And while the trials and challenges we have variously gone through have all taken their toll, I'd suggest that many of them could be likened to controlled heat treatment. Because no matter how difficult our situation may have been, we've generally had the opportunity to deal with it in our own way, in time, utilising the support we have around us, whether that be family or our brothers and sisters or just our relationship with God. And had time to come to terms with the situation we found ourselves in. A number of us have had to go through more than one round and may well be feeling a bit beaten and worn down. Yet, very often, those of us looking on from the outside will in fact be observing an increasingly valuable person, possibly harder than you once were, because that's what you need to be sometimes, but also tougher and more ready and able to persevere. And if that was the whole story, then despite having some sad bits, it would be a good story. But I don't think it is the whole story, because at the same time as we've been facing our various individual challenges, we've also collectively been through a number of difficult ecclesial situations. And some of these probably haven't really been dealt with or concluded in a particularly satisfactory way. As well as the sad loss of some loved and valued members, the internal result has been a lot of heat, with probably very little measured cooling off, a fair bit of friction and abrasion, and sadly it seems to me that this has left our ecclesia with quite a brittle edge, an outer skin that's become, as it were, work-hardened. Sometimes, of course, we don't worry too much about a person's outer skin, relying more on knowing the real person underneath. But one of the problems with the busy lives we live is that we don't always have or don't always take the time to communicate with the people underneath. And when this happens, the outer skin is the only view we have of each other. So then when we come and try and work on something together, we have a bunch of hard outer shells banging against each other, and they may shatter and break, or we may simply decide that it's too hard to work with each other or dismiss each other as ineffective. Recently, the Australian Senate welcomed 12 new members who come from diverse backgrounds and don't necessarily have much or any experience in politics. Interestingly, this was seen from two very different perspectives. Long-term politicians say that they will have to teach the newbies all about real policy making because they clearly don't know what's involved. While the new senators say that they will finally be able to bring some reality to politics because they are real people who've had to have real jobs, etc., etc. You get the picture. Both sides think that they have more value and credibility than the other, whereas the truth probably lies somewhere in the middle. 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 7 to 15 say, I'll give you a chance to turn up if you want, 1 Corinthians 12, starting at verse 7. To each is given the manifestation of the Spirit for the common good. For to one is given through the Spirit the utterance of wisdom, and to another the utterance of knowledge according to the same Spirit. To another faith by the same Spirit. To another gifts of healing by the one Spirit. To another the working of miracles. To another prophecy. To another the ability to distinguish between spirits. To another various kinds of tongues. To another the interpretation of tongues. All these are empowered by one and the same Spirit who apportions to each one according individually as he wills. For just as the body is one and has many members, and all the members of the body, though many, are one body, so it is with Christ. For in one Spirit we were all baptized into one body, Jews or Greeks, slaves or free, and all were made to drink of the one Spirit. For the body does not consist of many members, of one member, but many. If the foot should say, because I am not a hand, I do not belong to the body, that would not make it less a part of the body, etc. I think probably we know these verses fairly well. But I think verse 11 is important. All these are empowered by one and the same Spirit who apportions to each one individually as he wills. So what does that mean? if we're aware that we're known as a bit of a sledgehammer, do we just say, well, clearly God put me in the ecclesia to get things done? Or if we feel that we're seen as a bit of a stick in the mud, do we just say, well, God clearly put me here to calm down all the radicals who want to change everything? I don't think so. Philippians 2 verse 3 says, do nothing from rivalry or conceit, but in humility count on others more significant than yourselves. So does this mean that if we think we're the best person for the job and someone else declares that they think they know better, that we should say, fine then, do it your way, while underneath thinking, and I know exactly what's going to happen? Probably not. I think that's what's called taking your bat and ball and going home. Colossians chapter 3, verses 12 to 15. Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another if any of you has a grievance against someone. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them to get all together in perfect unity. Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, since as members of one body, you are called to peace. And be thankful. And brothers and sisters, we have so much to be thankful for. We have new babies on the way. We have newborn babies here, or relatively newborn. We have energetic children. We have new members, both through transfer and through baptism, very recent baptism. We have family and friends who are interested that we can share the gospel with. We have determined older members, and we have some long-lived seniors. And underneath any brittle shells that may have developed, we all love each other. And it would be so sad if the final months that we share together at DBEC to sharing what we've built here were spoiled by our brittle shells bouncing off each other. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 9 to 12 say, two are better than one because they have a good return for their labour. If any of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. Also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. A cord of three strands is not quickly broken. Fellowship, the fellowship we have, is priceless. But it comes at a price. The return that two get for their labour will only be beneficial if they agree to amicably split the income. Someone who falls can only benefit from help if it's offered and accepted. Two can only find warmth together if their survival is more important than their dignity. Two can only effectively defend themselves if they recognise and agree on their individual strengths and weaknesses. And a cord of three strands is only stronger because the three are working as one. Philippians 2 verses 1 to 4 say, so if there is any encouragement in Christ, any comfort from love, any participation in the Spirit, any affection and sympathy, complete my joy by being of the same mind, having the same love, being in full accord and of one mind. Do nothing from rivalry or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. I'll finish first soon with the next few verses. But first of all, the irony of Romeo and Juliet was that they should never have fallen in love. Their respective families were so opposed to each other that they, by rights, they should never have met, let alone fallen in love. But they did, and it was only the shared sorrow of their tragic death that finally brought the warring families together. I'm sure that I'm not the only one who has, over the years, seen divisions develop within previously close ecclesias. And from an outside, and divisions, that is, that from an outside perspective need not have occurred. But occur they do, and the results can be tragic, with members who have been friends for decades turning their backs on each other. Sometimes it's years before the hurt mends, and sometimes lives come to an end before that happens. Sometimes it's only the next generation that have the perspective to look back and see how needless the division and pain was. We will soon be having to dismantle something that wasn't built to come apart and to divvy up something that has become precious to us all. In all our dealings, please let's remember that 1 Corinthians 13 wasn't written for a wedding. It was written to teach us how to live with each other every day. And as the following verse in Philippians 2 say, having this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus, who, though he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men. And being found in human form, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. Therefore, God has wholly exalted him and bestowed on him the name that is above every name, so that at the name of Jesus, every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under earth, and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father.